know, when you play on one of the worst teams in the division and in the league, that's bound to happen. So I think he's just waiting now. And I know he loves Vancouver and he wants to play there, but the number has to be right.
You're listening to The People's Show with Zach, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
The number has to be right. That is Jack Hughes on Tim and Friends earlier today. The brother of Quinn Hughes, who is still unsigned with the Vancouver Canucks as they enter the week where they will start training camp. The number has to be right. That is the art of a negotiation. It has to be right for both sides. And right now, that is the crux of the negotiations for the Canucks with their two star players.
You think Jack Hughes and Matthew Tkachuk are going to get a commission from the job that they've been doing in media? And they've been a pretty solid job for the brothers, man.
Fantastic job. You know what I find really funny? And we always have these conversations, right? And we talked about the same thing during free agency. It's like all these numbers get thrown around.
Yeah.
And it's like they seem so astronomical. And then when the contract gets signed, you're like, oh. It sounded like it was going to be worse than it was. And it's like, and that's why I'm curious to see here, right? Because all the conversations and of how inflated this is and what the ask is. And it's like, and that number comes down. You're like, oh, well, I guess we shouldn't have been as worried as we were. We'll see if that happens.
Yeah. And, you know, I know it's, there's a lot of different ways to look at these negotiations. Some people will argue that the team has not handled this the best. Some will say the players are being too greedy. The reality is they're both looking for the best deal for each other. And where that ends up, likely to be on bridge contracts for both Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. Earlier today, the Canucks announcing that training camp will begin in Abbotsford on Thursday and will be open to not just media, but also fans. Access to training camp on ice sessions available now by way of a $5.50 donation, $5.50 donation with proceeds benefiting the Canucks for Kids Fund. All funds raised will remain in the Fraser Valley in support of local children's charities and causes. So that is starting on Thursday at the Abbotsford Center. You can check out Canucks.com for more on how to be a part of that and what sort of regulations are a part of that as well. Strict health protocols have been developed for the safety of media and guests in association with the guidance of the provincial health order. So if you want to go out to training camp, there are certain things, as you know, you have to do and the vaccination required to attend all events. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. Let's now bring in our next guest. It is Don Taylor, Donnie and Dolly on Check TV, Monday through Friday. What's up, Donnie?
Not much, guys. Good to be back again. How are you?
I know it's been a couple of weeks, but I'm still, like, I can't believe you wore jeans to a wedding, Donnie.
Okay, I know. You know, I sort of like was coming, and it is, for people who don't know, was Ryan Henderson, who's our producer at Donnie and Dolly. It was his wedding, and I thought I looked pretty good. I thought it was okay, and I thought, you know what the heck, it's outside, so I'll go with it. But now I realize that in terms of social media, I took a lot of the attention away from his bride, from Kelsey, and I really feel bad about that. So some of the humor is left, but yeah, a dumb move, and I should know better. I'm you know, older than 19. I should definitely know better, and I've heard all about it.
Who was the most random person to give you an opinion on this, one way or another?
Oh God, there's so many people that I've heard. I don't, you know, Chris Faber had a lot of fun with it, but I don't. You know, I put it this way: I don't know anyone who hasn't had an opinion on it. I've had it, but you know what? It's funny. Like a lot of people have supported me in it. Until I bring up the fact that maybe I stole. You know, it's impossible to steal the show from Ryan and Kelsey, but maybe I stole part of the show from them. But I've had some support. In that there was nothing on the invitation about no jeans, so I will point that out.
That's just bad producing by Ryan.
It is. It really is. There was also no sweatpants on the invitation too. Okay.
So you could have gone in that direction.
I know it could have been. It could have been worse. So there's that.
So it's funny. We went to a wedding a week later. Cam Barrow, who's our producer, and one of the people came up to us and said, "All right, which one of you guys is going to wear jeans tonight?" So there you go. You were talking point the week after as well.
Hey, listen, I'm Canadian. Jeans, you know, I didn't have the all-out Canadian tuxedo, but I was halfway there, so there's that.
That would have been a look. The Walker Texas Ranger Canadian tuxedo. I could dig it. It's Don Taylor joining us here on the People's Show. So training camp is getting underway. I'm kind of wondering, like, when you go through your time covering Canucks training camps, is there one that would stick out more than others in terms of storylines or funny stories that may have happened?
Well, when it comes to stories, and they can't all be told, and I can just say two words when it comes to stories. Now, keep in mind that back in the day, they weren't three-day camps. They were a week long. They were a week and a half, 2 weeks. You were in Duncan. You were in Parksville, where Trevor Linden had his first ever training camp back in 1988, by the way. Whistler, Kelowna, some pretty cool places, Victoria. And I'll just sum them all up this way with two words, Barry Houlihan. And I'll leave it at that, okay? I can't say any more. He's a fun guy back in the day. He's a TV reporter. I will say this. This is what happened to me in the early 90s. The Canucks brought in Bob Mason as a goaltender. He ended up playing a few games from, I believe, 90-91. So Bob Mason is probably most famous for being the goaltender who was in goal for Washington when Pat LaFontaine scored in 1987 in the, you know, four overtime game that everybody talks about that was just crazy, just lasted forever. So he's famous for that. But he went on to play for the Canucks. So I go up to Bob Mason and I ask him for an interview. Big, tall, blonde guy. So I ask him for an interview, sit down with my cameraman. And as I'm doing the interview, asking the questions, I realize that I'm not talking to Bob Mason. I'm talking to somebody else because he's talking about being a defenseman at camp. So somehow, some way, I remembered that the Canucks had brought in that day a defenseman who played a long time for Anaheim by the name of Bobby Dulles. He also played for Winnipeg. So I managed in the back of my mind to come up with this. We ended up doing a feature with Bob Dulles that was actually pretty good. But I wasn't until halfway through the interview that I realized I wasn't talking to the guy I was supposed to be talking to. But like Bob Mason, he was tall, he was blonde, and his name was Bob. So when I asked him for an interview, he said, "Yeah, sure." And he goes, because back then, there's no social media. You're not sure what everybody looks like. And I should have known better than that. They kind of looked the same a little bit. So that was one training camp faux pas that I went through. But, man, I'm telling you guys, I feel sorry for you that you never went through one of those really long training camps. You got to, you know, like I said, you'd go away for a week, week and a half, try to bank all your stories the first day or two, like just do like six stories and then pretend that they were fresh the day you sent them out. And the rest of the time you just golf and go out and have fun, usually with Houlihan.
Okay, so the 80s and 90s were it. Like, we clearly missed out. We missed the golden age of sports reporting. But back in the day, and I think this is progress as far as hockey is concerned, but back in the day, you had like legit in practice fights. I remember talking to Robin Bawa back in the day when he came to camp with the Canucks. I think in the span of 2 or 3 days, he had to fight like 8 guys in practice, Donnie. Is that something that you remember?
Oh, definitely. It was something that, like, so on Sports Page, you'd have, a highlight package from a scrimmage or whatever the case may be, a story for the day, one of them being on Bobby Dulles. And then you'd have a montage of the fights that happened at training camp. And, you know, like in one day you'd have, like Robin Bawa would have said, 4, 5, 6 fights in a day, maybe even in a scrimmage. Because why? Because that's how players wanted to get noticed. And, you know, again, it wasn't like today with this, the information age where we know everything. Back then, yeah, a guy got an invite to a camp, but a scout, an assistant GM, and some executive would have no idea what the kid was all about. So you aren't always going to score. You're not really in control of that, or you're not always going to get an assist. But darn it, you can fight someone and get yourself noticed. And it happened all the time, and it was completely different. And now the rules have changed, times have changed, but in its own weird kind of horrific way, and I hate to say it because we all know the concussion issue, but you did look forward to it. You just couldn't believe what you were seeing in a way.
Yeah, I mean, times have changed so much. Don Taylor is our guest from Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV. And Donnie, today you guys had Elliot Friedman on, and I don't know if you know this, but a couple of Canuck players are unsigned ahead of training camp, and nobody's talking about it. But I don't know why Elliot decided to talk about this random topic, but he mentioned the latest on Pettersson and Hughes here. And I guess the biggest question, and we've been kind of kicking this around here on the show, Donnie, is does the deal get done before training camp? Unlikely. During training camp? Or does it get done when the season begins?
Elliot today on our show said that he feels the real pressure point is, and Rick and I were talking about how, you know, the general consensus is that the pressure point is training camp. Players want to be at training camp. They want to be with their teammates. Yes, they can go on the ice now and be in shape or get into shape the way players do these days, but they want to be at camp. They want to be with their friends. They want to get the ball rolling. Could be an exciting season for the Canucks, but Elliot feels the real pressure point, of course, is the start of the regular season. And that's when I think I got the feeling that's when Elliot feels something. He didn't have any scoops for us, but I get the feeling he feels that that's when things are going to happen, not at training camp, which isn't like the old days. We just went through that. It's not a week. It's not a week and a half. It's a blink of an eye. And he thinks the pressure point will come at the start of the season, and that's when it's more likely to happen.
Isn't that a bit of a, maybe this is a harsh word, but disaster scenario for both team and player, that this could get down to the 11th hour of the first regular season game and what is supposed to be a bounce back year for the Canucks organization? They're going to potentially go with their two best players not going through training camp. I mean, it just doesn't seem like the best way to start on the right foot after all of the bad that happened last year, Donnie.
Absolutely. But you guys have been around for a while. I've been around for a long while. What do we all expect to happen? The worst possible thing. This side of them not coming back at all, it has to be them missing the start of the season. So I think it would just be so Canuck for it to happen, and I expect it to happen just because it's the Canucks, and there's just things that just misfortune seems to follow this team around. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if that happens. Now, having said that, getting back to them missing training camp, you guys can help me out, but, you know, Besser missed camp, or at least part of camp, a couple of years back, ended up having a pretty good start to the season. So, I mean, things can happen. That's camp. It's not the start of the season. So things can happen in a positive way in this situation. I just highly doubt it.
Yeah, Vancouver is one of those cities as well, though, even though, you know, the contract, there's still a good chance they'll be signed before the beginning of the year. But there is the blame game. Some folks are blaming the team, some of the players, some of the agents. Is it fair to blame anybody, or is this just a part of the game? This is what contract negotiations are now.
Yeah, it's a business. Our poll question today had to do with along the lines of who do you blame if they're not there at training camp. And Jim Benning won or lost the poll, depending on how you want to look at it. The agents finished second. Players third. And I can't even remember if we had a fourth option. It's all a blur. It's just part of it. It's just, you know, I think a lot of people have a hard time believing that anybody, when you're getting this amount of money, can be unhappy in this situation. The problem is it's they're living in a world where they're not comparing themselves to us. They're comparing themselves to their NHL brethren, and they want to be fairly compensated in their eyes. And here we are with them unsigned. It's not surprising. It's just a matter of when it's going to end.
Donnie, we appreciate the time as always, and maybe we'll have to find a way to bring back those epic training camps.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, for anybody, by the way, Barry Houlihan, I love the guy. I hung out with him a lot on the road. He reminded me a lot of one of my older brothers. I just absolutely love the guy. He was a prince. He was a great sportscaster, and Loved hanging out with him. So when I was talking about him at training camps, it was all a compliment. Trust me,
Donnie. Before we go, this is the last time we'll bring it up. I promise. But Marcus and Gibson's is asking, are you a Wrangler guy or a Levi jeans guy?
No, I like Lee.
Oh, okay, all right,
your brand Lee.
All right.
No one remembers it.
We'll have to look that one up. Thanks, Donnie.
Yeah. All right, guys. Anytime.
There he is, Don Taylor, the legend himself, Donnie and Dolly. Joining us.
Thought he was going to go Jordache.
Or whatever's on sale. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever's at Winners is usually my go-to. It is the People Show, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. And it is continuing to be the biggest story and will continue to be the biggest story going into the next couple of days as training camp starts to get underway. Wednesday, the Canucks will have media day, and then Thursday they'll begin training camp in Abbotsford. Games beginning on Sunday for the Vancouver Canucks with training camp as well. So that's that. And we'll have more on that coming up through the course of the show. Some thoughts on JT Miller doing a little bit of a conversation with Ian McIntyre, also Brock Besser on earlier in the day. But we do have a Monday nighter tonight. It is the Detroit Motor City Lions at the Green Bay Packers. And the Packers, despite getting their you-know-whats handed to them last week, are still 11.5-point favorites at home to the rebuilding, I feel like perpetually rebuilding, Detroit Lions.
Is it even fair to say that? Isn't that like their norm?
Yes.
Like if they do anything different, I think we need to acknowledge that. But like they are the Lions. They're just lining.
The Detroit under constructions.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes. The Detroit under constructions is what they are. 11.5-point dogs. You know, they covered last week against the Niners. But this does feel like a pretty big bounce back spot for the Packers after nothing went right in week one, where they were kind of the joke of week one. Aaron Rodgers certainly didn't like where the team was, said they were unprepared. He didn't play well. The whole team didn't play well. And the scoreline showed it, losing 38-3. What do we expect to see from Aaron Rodgers and the Packers tonight?
Well, I'm expecting them to be a lot better. I'm expecting them to actually look somewhat cohesive, and maybe that defense doesn't get bullied all game long. I think that's part of it too, but they were so bad in week one that
there's nowhere to go but up.
Right. They are going to be better, but are they going to impress us? I think that's going to be the question.
Yeah, you got to do a lot to impress against the Lions. Let's be honest, they covered last week, but what we know about the Niners haven't looked like a division winner this season either. Now they've got injuries to deal with, but my point is, part of it was the 49ers winning that game. Part of it was the Lions kind of being let back into that game. So I expect, you know, I want to see the Packers smack around the Lions today. You talk about that line. Like, I'd like to see a 2-touchdown win. Like, that's what will impress me with the Packers, where Rodgers uses his weapons. That defense against Jared Goff shows something. The degree of difficulty is much easier this week. New Orleans, you know, defense is, on their day, one of the better defenses in the NFC. The Lions are not that. The Lions are clearly not that. So I want to see the Packers smack them around a little bit. And anything less than that, we're talking about a team that is touted as a NFC favorite for the Super Bowl, or at least in that discussion with the Buccaneers. You got to come back and you got to have some revenge on a terrible, terrible week last week.
The line even increasing to 12 points now. Packers 12-point favorites, the total sitting at 49. But it is time for our people's best bets for the Monday nighter. And
speaking of turning it around.
Yes. The people's not best bet comes to you daily from Randeep Janda, who is now 0-4 for the start of the NFL season. You went with the Chiefs -3.5 against the Ravens last night, and that did not work. Ravens end up winning that game.
Just bad luck. Good for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Bad for my best bets. Bad luck on the first bets, four bets this season. But I'm going to turn it around, folks.
Okay.
Turn it around.
Confidence.
This sounds like Friday.
Positive vibes. Don't replay that show, please, because it's going to sound very similar. But I'm happy with my pick this week, or tonight. going with Robert Tonyan.
Okay.
Over 31.5 yards. This is a player that was shut out pretty much like a lot of the Packers last week. But, you know, at minus 110, you know that Aaron Rodgers is going to go back to him at some point as well. He was key to Rodgers' attack last year in that MVP season. And that number to me, it's not all that high. This is a player against that defense. He has produced against the Lions in the past as well. Smash the over. I'm going Tonyan over 31.5.
All right. Robert Tonyan is where Randy
Tonyan
is going.
I always butcher his name.
Is where Randeep is going with his pick.
Are you doing all the Aaron Jones props, Dan? And are you trying to will something into existence here?
So Eddie Lack needs 22 fantasy points, half PPR league to beat me. And eventually, if that happens, I have to reveal the Zdeno Chara photo. Mm. So, yeah, like you can take this as it were, but I'm betting with my heart tonight.
Okay.
And my hope of not wanting to reveal said photo and lose this crucial fantasy matchup with Eddie Lack, I am betting Aaron Jones under 94.5 total yards against the Detroit Lions here tonight. It doesn't seem like that high of a number. Probably baked in is how poorly the Packers offense played last week and how little they used Aaron Jones, but that's total yards. Aaron Jones under 94.5 total yards. Betting with my heart, but I had the win with Joe Burrow. Also betting with my heart over 1.5 touchdown passes on Friday. Got the backdoor cover, Blake Bortles style on that one, but doing it again tonight. Aaron Jones, let's hope. Let's hope we see a lot of A.J. Dillon tonight, okay? That's A.J. Dillon. He's the better back. We all know it.
Okay. So I was tempted to take all the overs on Aaron Jones just to go against the reach.
Don't do it, Seth.
At least the anytime touchdown, those odds aren't great. I like the over. Come on.
The over? Yeah, I like the over, but I won't because he already took Aaron Jones. I'm not going to take Aaron Jones.
Okay.
But, yeah, if I had to bet Aaron Jones, I'd take the over on rushing yards. I think it was 64.5 or something, whatever it is. So, I'd take the over on him. But my bet would actually be TJ Hawkinson over 54.5 yards receiving. TJ Hawkinson now going back to, I think, his last seven games in the NFL. He has had over 50 yards receiving in seven of the last eight games. Yeah. So this is a guy who's really finding his place, and especially after that first week, how he was targeted, I think, about 10 times, had a big game for Detroit. I like TJ Hawkinson being the top receiving target for Detroit.
Is he on the cusp of joining the Waller, Kelsey, and Kittle conversation? I feel like he is. There's a lot of expectation. Also with Jared Goff, he's very, essentially that offense has kind of run through him anyways. They don't got anything else. So
they don't have any real receivers.
No,
it's
they
like
don't.
Amon-Ra St. Brown. There's your
Quintez
Cephas. Cephas is the other receivers that he could potentially go to. And that's, you mentioned TJ Hawkinson. Love that one. I also really like, my main bet is under 94.5 on Aaron Jones.
That's your heart, not your head.
DeAndre Swift over on his receiving yards as well, because again, they just have no one else to go to. And I expect the Lions to be chasing in this game, much like they were last week against the San Francisco 49ers. And that's going to be Jared Goff's go-to play, is dumping it off to his running back and looking for his tight end.
This feels like a game where Aaron Rodgers is going to prove a point, right? Like after last week. So
I don't know.
You better hope. You better hope that Aaron Jones doesn't end up getting those yards. But I feel like they're out to prove a point this week.
I'm buying the Dan Campbell. Like, we're not going to give up.
Biting
kneecaps. They're not going down without a fight. Like, they know they're not a good football team. But like, I think we see a lot of backdoor cover. Like, I would not lay the 11.5 points, the 12 points with the Packers today.
So I think what's going to happen tonight, and this is my big prediction. The Detroit Lions come through, big, big performance, shut down Aaron Jones. And then reach is like 1.5 good Lions games away from being a Lions fan next season.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I am not going to switch allegiances.
I think it's fair.
Dan Campbell, Lions. Also named Dan. He's going to be
big-time coffee drinker.
Right? And if he helps him put that photo under wraps for at least another betting cycle.
You know, we have the worryometer. We got to have a Dan Fanometer throughout the year where which team is he going to jump ship for? It tightens at the beginning of the show, but right. All of a sudden the lines do the job tonight. Maybe the Fanometer goes in a different direction.
Team Lack is coming in very strong our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Hashtag Team Lack. Packers need to run it down the Lions' throat so we can see that photo.
No. No, dear God, no.
Chris and Duncan really enjoyed, he said, that was freaking awesome, the the montage for Derrick Henry coming in and going ham. But yeah, Reach is now a Titans fan.
Also, no, I am not.
Also,
okay?
My man Gajith came in with a text earlier saying, guys, just a question for Richo. Who's his NFL crush this week? Just following up. Gajith wants to know.
Joe Burrow let me down a little bit.
A little bit. You still cashed out, though, but...
I did.
Fantasy-wise, yeah, you got ripped to shreds almost.
Marcus and Gibson's. Dan Campbell talked about biting kneecaps. Perfect height for Dan Riccio.
Oh, man.
All right, that's enough. We'll get to a couple more texts coming up after the break. Plus, not saying, just saying, get your submissions in. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is the People's Show.
You're listening to The People's Show with Seth, Dan, and Randy on Sportsnet 650.
This text line is just next level right now. Reach is a Danbury Trashers fan. Make fun of him and he will destroy you. Just kidding. He's as scary as an Oompa Loompa.
Gulliver's Travels.
I believe those were Lilliputians. Oompa Loompas is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
All right, Charlie and Charlie. Yeah,
I got my books in order.
You're right. You good job.
I'm a big good Robert job. Swift fan.
Robert Swift, great. Jonathan Swift.
Jonathan.
There we go.
Who the hell is Robert Swift?
That's a basketball player, wasn't he?
Between the two of you, you got it right.
Yeah, Jonathan
as Swift. As long as I didn't say Stromile Swift, we're good.
I'm still on DeAndre Swift. Like, I don't know.
Jonathan Swift. Yeah, there we go.
Wow. My English professor would not be very amused with this segment.
I remember Lilliputians. That counts for something.
Yeah.
Being compared to an Oompa Loompa, not the first time, maybe some time for some new material from the citizens of the people.
Or embrace it, and maybe that's your Halloween costume this year.
You want me to be an Oompa Loompa?
Just lean in.
Actually,
don't lean back, lean in.
High school play was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I played Mr. Salt, not an Oompa Loompa. So
that was bad casting.
Were there any Oompa Loompas in the production that were taller than you?
Yes, there were.
I'm done. The text line. Usually, I lean into this position. I'm like, nah, I'm done.
It's good.
The man's been dragged enough.
I always feel bad for Dan, and then all I can think of is, look how small he is.
Oh, not saying, just saying. Coming up, we're giving you all the material you could possibly need for the Dunbar
and you haven't seen the Chara picture yet. Is the funny part.
As long as I'm getting somebody to laugh, it is the People's Show here on Sportsnet 650. We're getting a lot of texts in on the Dunbar Lumber text line, as we always do. Edge and Port Moody. Guys, I'm a Titans fan first, but cheer for the Hawks in all other scenarios. I'm worried about that D. I mean, 30 was the least Tennessee could have put up through 60 minutes. Stalled red zone possessions, called back a legit TD, missed field goal. That's from Edge in Port Moody.
Yeah, and he went on to say Bobby Wagner was unbelievable. And if he's that good and the defense is that bad, how do you get out of the division? It was concerning yesterday, right? And here's the thing. We're guilty of this, too, because we're talking and we do the, overreactions, and all this sort of stuff, especially early in the season. We joke around about it. But the things we talked about in week one, all of a sudden, week two, it looks so different. So, I mean, you really, when we're talking about things, we're having fun, but you got to be really, really careful to not get completely fooled by what happens early in the season, right? The high is probably not going to be as high as they look. The lows probably won't be as low as they look. And what always happens, teams take about 4 or 5 weeks to figure things out, to really get going and stuff like that. So I wouldn't worry too much about it, but it was concerning to see the Hawks have such command of that game and then completely lose it in the second half. Like, that was your game to when you had it completely under control and then you just stepped all over it.
Yeah, and, you know, especially with week one, you had the strong defensive play, especially from that defensive line where they took the pressure off the corners. You didn't necessarily see that in week two, right, where Julio Jones had his, you know, way with that secondary to a certain extent as well. But I think the point that Edge brought up as well was the Titans had a lot of opportunities. Like, 30 is the minimum that they could have put up, because everything felt like it was breaking towards the Seahawks earlier on in that game. The Titans have momentum, and guess what? Goes the other way. Mm-hmm. Seahawks wrestle it back, or there's some luck on their side. But in that fourth quarter, like, they just could not basically close that game.
Yeah.
And it comes back to defense, right? After week one, and you were criticizing, saying, why aren't they in your top five?
Some of it was their own doing. You know, like, Derrick Henry ran all over them, but, you know, they bottled them up through the first half. So what changed? And a lot of what changed is straight up discipline on the team. And I don't just mean, you know, the bad penalties that they took, but that was a part of it. You know, extending drives with crucial third down penalties. The, you know, nobody likes the taunting penalties, but they're a reality in the NFL right now, and you have to adjust to them. DK Metcalf kind of set the tone a little bit. He was kind of flying off the handle early in that game, and that discipline kind of creeped into the Seahawks in the second half, where you saw guys making mistakes. You saw, you know, on the Henry Long touchdown, it's just you can't let him get the edge there. Mm-hmm. And
Diggs had a chance and couldn't tackle him. Yeah. You saw how mad he was for not being able to make that tackle. And that's tough. 1-on-1 against Derrick Henry. I mean, that's tough to do. And, hey, he's going to get his. But you couldn't generate anything on offense either. That's what got me. It's like, hey, sometimes that happens. It changes around. But you couldn't do anything on offense.
They didn't have a ton of chances. Like, they had one offensive series in the third quarter.
Yeah.
You know, the Titans just were able to keep Russell Wilson off the field. And
especially in that fourth, too, in the final possession. Yeah.
So, you know, that was a big part of the second half. And we kind of overreacted to the Titans' first week as well, a little bit. Look, their offensive line is still a mess, and the Seahawks did not take advantage of that. The Seahawks defense did not do their part, but we have to remember, like, this Titans offense has been, what, top 10 in the league since Ryan Tannehill showed up, pretty much? So that's definitely a part of this. They're not exactly a layup when it comes to being able to stop that team.
No, and especially Derrick Henry. We're talking about a runner that will make life difficult for you, and especially in that fourth quarter when he's, you know, pounding the ball behind that offensive line, at some point there's going to be that fatigue of you've been dealing with him in the entire game. And look at the time of possession. The Titans had the ball times two. They doubled up on possession time of what the Seahawks had, and eventually that wears you down. So there were questions about that D-line being able to play to that same level that they did in week one. But then all of a sudden you add the best rusher in the game, the most powerful back in the game, that's going to wear you down. And we saw that fatigue set in, especially in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, but usually, like, when you get a lead on a team, it's not the running game that gets you back into the game, right? Now, there was a couple big plays that he got off, and that's what did it. But, like, what happens usually is you take a lead and the other team has to get away from his running game. That's what happened in week one against Arizona, right? Tennessee got down in the hole early. They couldn't rely on a running game anymore, and they had to air it out and try to come back and win. It was those big plays they gave up to Derrick Henry really changed it all up, right? Because generally speaking, when you're trailing by a couple of scores and you're in the second half, you shouldn't be able to get back into the game just with your run game.
Oh, man,
I mean, for
the longest time, I was like, yes, keep feeding it to Derrick Henry, right? Because I'm getting fantasy points, but also, like, you're running clock.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not exactly the most efficient way of running your playbook when you're trying to come back from two scores down in a game. But it worked. I don't think there's any other team in the league that could make that work, necessarily, other than the Titans with Derrick Henry when he got going.
And remember, there were 6 to 7 drops from the Titans in that game as well. Like, they were dropping the ball all over the place. A.J. Brown had some bad plays as well. So when we talk about the Titans still not being 100%, you know, efficient in what they were doing, yeah, they gave the Seahawks a number of opportunities to get back in that game. They just couldn't get a stop late.
This text, Robin Poco, that missed convert turned out to be important, just saying.
You're absolutely right, Robin Poco. A missed extra point when you go up two scores. Got to be the Seahawks that eventually comes back to bite them. It's life as a Seahawks fan.
Well, Myers hasn't missed a field goal in a couple of years, though. He misses the extra point there, which hurts. But he's probably the most consistent.
No, but the point is, like,
kickers in the league.
Most situations that doesn't come back to bite you, but in Seahawks land, as Bick says, when the craziest stuff happens to the Seahawks, and this week certainly applied. Things were a little too normal for the first three halves of football that the Seahawks played.
Too easy.
So you just knew something was going to change eventually. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. Update, Blue Jays up 1-0 on the Tampa Bay Rays. Big boy home run from Teoscar Hernandez.
Is Teoscar Hernandez the most likable player in the American League?
He's certainly one of them. The Blue Jays have like 90% of the most likable players in baseball.
Teoscar. I mean, like that smile.
I don't like any of them, guys, right now at this point in time.
But just like his smile, and he always like he seems like the happy go lucky dude. And every time you see him talk, like everybody talks, says really good things about him. Every time I see Teoscar smile, I feel better about myself. And he's not even smiling at me.
Anytime I see the Blue Jays winning and the Yankees losing, I smile a little bit. That works too.
It's not over yet.
You keep telling yourself that, Randy. All right, it is the People's Show. It's time for Not Saying, Just Saying here on the People's Show. Lots of reaction already on the Dunbar Lumber text line. JD in Coquitlam coming in hot. Not saying Demko will win the Vezina Trophy this season. I'm just saying the only thing more dependable will be Rintoul teasing his next segment before going to break.
Rinty's got some teases, man.
Man,
solid teases.
Rintoul never misses a tease. He's legendary with his shooting percentage on awesome teases.
Teases and segues. Scotty Rintoul is the king. Brad Holmes, Texan, Dunbar Lumber, 650-650. I'm not saying we're constantly rebuilding. I'm just saying City Hall is really dragging their feet on permits, bruh. That's Brad Holmes.
That's a rare inclusion of both City Hall policy and sports. That's impressive, Brad Holmes. I like that. We got this one from Rager. Not saying the Seahawks have a really soft D. I'm just saying they have a consultation with Dr. Pollock. It's pretty good.
James from Langley. Not saying hashtag Team Lack is going to win tonight. Just saying if they do, we're all winners. Even Reach. Get it over with.
Like ripping off a Band-Aid, apparently.
Aaron Jones needs 22 points for Eddie Lack to beat me in the People Show Fantasy League.
On that note, though, here's mine. I'm not saying Eddie Lack is scared of the one-chip challenge. I'm just saying my sources tell me he's fleeing the continent as we speak. Headed toward the border.
Yeah, and so we have a number of Swedes that listen to this show all over the world. We have Swedes in Sweden. We have Swedes in Europe and Canada and in Washington, like Anders in Issaquah, Washington. He says, guys, I'm Swedish, and I get my tofu pad thai 4 stars hot. So maybe Anders has to do the one chip challenge for Eddie Lack.
No subs. No subs. That's impressive, though, Anders. Is that like the ECHL version of Spice, though? It sounds like a 4 stars. Come on, man. I'm calling BS on that.
I do have some texts from Eddie Lack from yesterday that are pretty hilarious.
Can you read them?
I kind of want to. So I won't go through the entire exchange. But Eddie was like worried as things were playing out and Derrick Henry was putting up a lot of points. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, though, kept this alive with his horrible night last night. If he had, even 10 points, I'm probably home and cooled out. But Eddie at one point was just like, you just have to release the photo. I might die. I shouldn't laugh at that, but Eddie is like,
he's
concerned.
He is
not exactly hyped up to eat this one chip.
Is there a buyout? Can he buy out his bet? Is there anything he can do to buy it out?
We leave that to you, Reach. What do you think?
No.
No?
I had to go through with the one-chip challenge and all the pain that entailed.
As did I. Here's one text from Eddie yesterday. What do you think about my two guys that are left playing? He texted me during the game last night saying, how much of a chance do I have?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not going great. Not great.
When the Ravens were driving late, I'm like, they score that touchdown, and it's like, oh, great, look, they're not even going to bring in Justin Tucker for the extra point. And he's like, damn it. I need every point I can get.
Just go for the first down. Huh.
Not saying, just saying, on the People's Show, getting on the Dunbar Lumber text line.
Marcus and Gibson's. I'm not saying Randeep is getting tired of all the Jays updates by Dan. I'm just saying it'll be a long October for him if the Yankees don't figure it out.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that right now, but Marcus, I think you're on to something.
It's so currently a long September.
Have you ever related to the $300 million man, Gerrit Cole, than you did yesterday when he was cussing on the mound when he saw the Blue Jays score?
Yeah, I've done that a few times in the last couple of weeks.
Like,
I also related to Yankees fans that were booing the team. Yeah. Not maybe Gerrit Cole, because he's been the only good
thing.
Oh,
you're that guy?
No, no. Dude, you're getting paid that much money, and you know, Boone comes out and says, oh, they're trying their best. They get annihilated in the first two innings in a do-or-die series, essentially. Yeah, they deserve to be booed.
Mm-hmm.
That's New York, man. That's New York. I'm not saying the one-chip challenge doesn't bring the heat. I'm just saying that heat will pale in comparison to the heat on Wednesday for Jim Benning if Petey and Quinn aren't signed. Signed, Ollie from South Van.
Ah.
Ollie. I like it, Ollie. Gary, not saying, just saying, if Bill Belichick was coaching in that Seahawks game, there is no way Derrick Henry would have continued running like that. He would have forced Tannehill to throw the ball more.
If Bill Belichick was the Seahawks coach, they'd have another Super Bowl.
maybe a few.
At least that one.
And Tom Brady would have never left New England. Just minor Matt in Abbotsford. I'm not saying I really love this song. I'm just saying Donnie's bridge music should be Len, Steal My Sunshine. Ham and Cheese Henderson would never play it for him.
All right. We got Thomas in Surrey. I'm not saying Reach is in trouble. I'm just saying Aaron Jones is going to have himself a night.
Listen, Thomas, I don't like the energy you're bringing to the People Show right now, okay? It's not nice of you to will the Chara photo into existence.
That's actually you're doing a great public service, Thomas. Keep it up.
So, like, I released the preview yesterday, and I figured it would, you know, really get people amped to see it. You just see Chara and, like, just the tip of my head. So it was pretty hilarious just to see the height discrepancy there. But
how tall is Chara again?
What is he, 6'8", 6'9"?
6'9".
And we see like 6'5 of Chara. we barely see Reach.
Yeah, to your point, I saw you tweeted. Yeah, Chara was actually kneeling in that photo as well. That's not even full Zdeno Chara. But also another wrinkle to this, what hat was Dan Riccio wearing? A Miami Dolphins hat. Or a toque or whatever it was.
It's an old picture. Yeah.
Another.
Is that a children's hat? Because it kind of looked like they were
That is actual savage today, man. I don't even know if I'm the savage normally. Wow.
Because, like, it really looks like the dolphin is exterior to the hat. Like a little kid would have, like, you know, like a goofy hat with a goofy swinging back and
I'm
forth.
I'm telling you, there's, like, nothing good about that picture for me. So, I'm not even afraid to admit it. It's just, it's all kinds of bad.
Let's turn our sights to Randeep for a moment. Fuzz says, oh, Fuzz, not saying that Yankees missing the playoffs is the greatest. Just saying that I won't have any
Are you sure you want to read that? Because I think if you read it through, it implies something else there, Sat. It's kind of like the married woman in the Mercedes text you were about to go there.
I stopped.
Like, why is Sat having so much like, why can't he read this? Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, Fuzz is basically saying he'll enjoy himself. Let's put it that way. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
On that Chara note, though, back to that, Marcus and Gibson's. Not saying, just saying, Chara will be trending on Twitter tonight. And not because of his signing.
Because he signed with the New York Islanders. Oh, man. All right. That's it for Not Saying, Just Saying on the People Show today. Coming up, Bob Glauber, New York Newsday, will be joining us. Newsday sports NFL columnist and co-writer of the Forgotten First. Bob Glauber, we go into the weekend that was in the NFL. And we'll even do that with our Week 2 NFL recap as well. Who were we most impressed by, least impressed by, and our overreactions from the weekend. It is the People's Show on Sportsnet 650.